Welcome to AI, Government and the Future, a podcast by Corner Alliance. We explore the intersection of artificial intelligence, government and the future. We work with government to create results. We ignite your agency's mission by helping you to design and implement high impact and innovative federal programs in AI, broadband, cybersecurity, public safety and more. Being a government ally is at the core of all we do.
Welcome in. I am your host, Max Romanek. On today's episode of AI Government in the Future, we are delighted to have Dr. Emphon Akpon join us on the podcast. Dr. Akpon is currently an assistant professor of accounting at Methodist University, where he imparts his extensive knowledge in accounting and financial management to both undergraduate and graduate students. Over a decade of experience in academia, Dr. Akpon has a strong foundation in teaching, research, and service within the fields of accounting, finance, business, and management. His innovative use of pedagogical methods and online platforms has significantly enhanced the educational experience for his students. Additionally, Dr. Akpon serves as the audit committee for the city of Fayetteville, North Carolina, contributing his expertise to oversee the city's financial affairs effectively. His research on bringing the digital divide and extensive work in integrating technology and education and public service makes him a trusted authority in the complex dimensions of AI. Welcome, Dr. Akpon.
Wow, thanks, Max. You make me sound good.
Nothing that is not well earned.
Appreciate the intro. Appreciate being here.
Absolutely. As a means of getting us started, Dr. Akpon, you have such a rich background in accounting and finance. Could you share with us initially what drew you to the field and what motivates you to integrate AI into your teaching and your research?
In one word, students. It's really a students. I moved into academia non-traditionally, meaning I didn't go straight in to do a PhD. I started as an adjunct, teaching part-time, and then moved into doing my doctorate and getting into teaching full-time. And it was all about the students, really being able to help and to contribute and to share and improve as many students' lives as I can.
In recent past, have you seen any shifts in their attitudes towards some of these new digital tools?
Absolutely. I've seen them using it more and more and finding different ways to, I don't want to use the word cheat, but to really get things done or to get assignments done, to become more productive. And when you think about it, that's really one of the ways you're supposed to use, particularly the large language models, supposed to help you to become more productive or be more productive.
Not to pull on the cheating thread, and we certainly won't call it that, but as an educator, how do you see AI affecting the ethical landscape for professional education and training?
It's hard because there's different, if you look 360 view, you've got educators who are for it, educators who are against it. I'm on the camp who's all for it, you need to use it, but there's others saying, and I can understand and empathize with the side that says, like, hey, we need to put some controls on how this is being used in the classroom. Students, you have different levels. You have some students who are all out. So they try to find every way that they can to use it. Then others stray away from it. So I see different extremes. I think from the educator standpoint, it's important for us to take a lead and at least let the students know where we stand on using it in the classroom.
One of the things that I hear from a lot of my colleagues in federal government consulting sector is that the younger generation is starting to use AI. What it effectively does is it makes them more effective in their roles. They can essentially do the job of multiple people. And I have some colleagues who are going so far as to say, if you're not using AI now, enjoy the last 5 years of your career. To your colleagues who might be hesitant to warmly embrace it in the classroom, what would you say to them when there are employers out there saying AI is going to be a basic fundamental skill of getting a job in the next couple of years?
That's a tough question. I would say because it's hard to tell someone what to do in their classroom, but I would say to a colleague, it's important. Hey, you may not want to use it in your classroom. You may be against it. You may not like it. But you need to learn about it because I'm using it, your students are using it, employees are using it. So it's important to at least find out what's out there and understand the environment you're navigating in, even if you're not looking to put it into your classroom. I think that would be my initial conversation.
Are you aware of any sort of like formal guidelines that exist trying to govern this behavior, or is it more like an institution by institution sort of approach at the moment?
I would say institution. And then at my institution, particularly in my department, we're asked to at least take a stance. So we at least say something about it in our syllabus. So if we've got a course, you can use it, how you can use it. So at least students can have some sort of guideline in our classes. The hard thing, and I think it's harder for students because they may have me as their professor and they're working on projects with AI in the class. So they're using it and then they may go to another professor that says, no, you cannot use this at all. This is banned. So it's kind of, you know, they may encounter those extremes. But I do think it's important that we do at least let them know as far as in the classroom what the expectations are.
That makes a ton of sense. Really related to this, you've spoken extensively on bridging the digital divide with rapidly advancing technology and the urgent need to try to close the gap. Related to this, what actions do you recommend from individuals and larger entities to try to make progress in this area?
It's going to be hard because you see, you've got the platforms. So you think about Anthropic, Claude, you've got OpenAI, GPT-4. The better features are behind paywalls. So if you think about that, that creates a gap there. And going back to what I was talking, you were asking about the students, I've got some students who pay the money. They scrape together the $20 a month and are plus users, and they're using GPT-4 across the board. Other students, they're not, and they don't have access to all of the features. So you can kind of see there's a rift. My concern is as the models get better and better and better, will that rift between what's free and what's behind that paywall increase? And the concern there is, okay, now in the workplace. So now you've got some students, okay, they're using the free model, but they don't have access to the one behind the paywall, which they'll need to know how to use when they go to a job or when they're in the workplace.
And certainly paywall features, one of the critical elements, especially that we see in the workplace now, is behind the paywall is how you have any modicum of privacy with these AI models. I mean, at least it's only sort of confined to the data that you feed it and all of that sort of thing. Are you starting to see some of the privacy concerns escalating? And then obviously within the digital divide and the lack of equity there, I feel like having something like privacy be the price you have to pay for access to a tool seems like quite a cost to extract from somebody. And then if otherwise you have to pay, then that's quite a trade-off that your students find themselves confronted with. How does that land for you when you are observing the decisions your students are having to make on the fly?
It disheartens me. Because you can see that from my perspective, the ones that really need it, they don't use it. And from my perspective, what I've seen is that there's an even bigger gap. So you'll have certain high-performing students, they're even more high-performing. And then the students that really need it, they're not using it or they don't have it. So you can see sort of a widening gap in some instances. So I think that can be concerning, particularly if there's the more and more usage in the workplace. I've just had a conversation about Microsoft Power BI, which is a business analytics tool. They've got a Copilot preview feature. So if you go into Power BI, Copilot previews in service, and it's in desktop. Copilot's powered by GPT-4. So if you're not using it or familiar with it, then there's a learning curve there if you're using that particular software. So I think that can be challenging.
Have you heard of any institutions starting to view it more like a cost of the semester? You have to buy a textbook. You also have to buy your semester subscription to GPT-4 for this semester's coursework. Has anybody floated an idea like that in any of your circles?
No, that would be an interesting idea. The other thing is you have to think about the internet. You got to make sure everyone has access to internet outside of the institution.
That would then put everybody behind the institution's paywall, at least. Probably provide a lot of flexibility for the faculty to see exactly how your students are using it, too.
It would. Good point.
I guess continuing down this line, bias and fairness are things that come up within AI systems a lot. We talk a lot about it. my government clients mostly are out of the DHS, Homeland Security, and public safety space. And so I hear about a lot of this stuff through that, you know, law enforcement bias in those data sets coming forward and then presenting itself in the outcome of the tools and that sort of thing. Are you seeing bias and fairness concerns in academia and in your arena? And like, what sort of steps are being taken to mitigate?
That's a very, very good question. That's a tough question. Bias is definitely there in the model. There is significant work to mitigate it. We've seen recently with Gemini, there was overtuning. So there was a whole conversation of they're overtuning the model against bias. I think what I would say on that, it's there, it exists. I would remind myself that the models, this is as bad as it will be. So today is as worse as it's going to be because the models, the technology is continuously improving. What do I mean by that? Well, you think about it, the more people using the models, we're helping to fine tune the models by prompting, by rating the responses. We're helping to craft and to fine tune. We're adding to the models itself. So bias is there. Don't get me wrong. It is a concern. It is an issue, but it's being mitigated. So there's work being done to mitigate it, but I don't think it will go away. I don't think that's something that you can completely eliminate.
Yeah, the computer scientists I talk to about this always like to reiterate that it is a computer. It will only do exactly what you tell it to do. And it's trained by humans. And we have inherent and implicit bias because we're humans. It's just part of who we are. They always like to suggest that what you can do in the interim is look at it through transparency. How do you at least make the operations of these models as transparent as possible so people can have an educated view of it? You might tacitly acknowledge, okay, there's some bias, but how can I see it in operation? Can I identify its source? When I look at an output, how am I supposed to distinguish between this was potentially clouded with bias versus this is the actual output free of any concerns from that perspective? And so for AI systems to be transparent and explainable, that feels very important just across the board. But I'm curious from an academia perspective, do you see the transparency and explainability of AI coming up as a critical topic ever?
When you say explainability, do you mean the explainability of the output or explainability of the technology itself to others?
Really both, because I think you run into related but somewhat separated concerns around each. If you don't know how it's doing what it's doing and then you're blindly relying on the outputs, that's certainly a risk. And then if you understand what it's doing, but you don't like what you're getting, and so you're trying to then fudge it because you don't like the result, that's a different sort of concern. But it all has to do with, do you understand what's being done? Is it being done in a transparent way? Can you explain it to other people so that you're not blindly relying on some model that is producing results that could be as surprising to you as anybody else?
Right. I think the big challenge is for users to understand that the large language models are not search engines. And I think when we see that window, we think, okay, this is Google. I'm going to type in something. I'm going to get what it is that I want, or, you know, so it's a search engine. So I think that's the big challenge that, and that could be lead to the frustration or disappointment. So you go in thinking I can type in something and it's just going to give me exactly what I want perfectly. And it doesn't work like that because it's not a search engine. I think that understanding how they work and what it is and using it correctly, understanding how prompting works, what prompting is, I think that would help with the frustration on one end. The other is what we call understanding generate and review. So I think you were alluding to a hallucination. So your output, you're going to have some hallucination. And to have that expectation and generate and review means, okay, if I have a task that would take me 4 hours to do, okay, just with no AI or anything, it's 4 hours for me to get this done. All right, if I use AI to generate it, whatever it is, to create whatever it is in 10 seconds, and I spend an hour reviewing it because I got to check it, okay, so now I've saved about 3 hours. So that's another way to look at it. Now, if you approach it that, oh, I'm going to just have AI to do whatever it is to help me with this spreadsheet, there's going to be disappointment there because of the hallucination. So understanding that, and I guess it comes back to understanding how the technology works and how it can help you in your workflows and how it may not be able to help you in your workflows. I think that's very important.
From that perspective of understanding how the technology works, transparency is a big regulatory concept in your other life, in terms of forcing transparency for accounting standards and all of that sort of stuff. Over there, are you seeing AI as a complicating factor with compliance and regulations in accounting and finance, or is it something that maybe is helping? And do you think there's a model there for forcing transparency in some of the AI providers, much the same we do with like our K's and Q's for financial transparency?
There's definitely challenges around ethics, privacy issues, client data, client information. So there's challenges around that point. However, around efficiencies, cost savings, the technology is being used across the board, implemented to move things forward a lot faster. One interesting thing, I'll tell you a story. So I had a student, she graduated last December. She came back to visit one of my classrooms. And one of the students in the class asked her, "Hey, are you using AI, large language models, in your job?" She said, "Well, things like ChatGPT, we use it to help us to speak with clients." So the student's like, "What do you mean?" Well, she was saying that, look, if I start speaking with you in accounting jargon, you would understand it, I would understand it, but the client may not understand it. So we want to have a better engagement with our clients. So we use the language models to help us to explain things in simple terms. How can we approach the client with this issue? How can we talk to them? So it helps in those ways. So again, adding to workflows.
That's definitely an interesting application for sure. We frequently use it for literal translation when we have people around the table who don't speak the same language. And I've definitely seen some efforts where in order to assess whether or not the translations being provided are correct, some of those companies are trying to open up, you know, essentially vetting forums where you can sort of say like, yeah, okay, I typed that in. I speak both languages fluently. This is correct. Obviously, there's a big portion of the training that goes into that sort of thing, but I just look at it from the perspective of those things that can happen in the shadows. Sometimes we have to trust that they are not nefarious and we're frequently wrong. When you force it into daylight through a transparency mechanism, then everybody's aware. Everyone can sort of see what's happening there. And so as you are serving the city of Fayetteville in that sort of arena, do you see a role for required enforced transparency for the providers of an AI service?
I think transparency is very important. I think another issue that I'm interested in, I guess I would say this, is around the gray area of AI usage as we move into more and more devices and having LLMs in more and more places. So I was having this conversation with a colleague of mine, and the fact that we kind of were going back and forth about this topic, it made me think there needs to be further discussion on it. My point being is that we were talking about smart glasses. I don't know if you're familiar with smart glasses, Meta AI glasses that have AI. You can take pictures, you can live stream. You've got the Rabbit R1 pen that can record and take images. There's the AI app. So as we were discussing, does this fall under cell phone usage as far as privacy in the workplace or not? And I said, well, we had to discuss it. And do you think there will be issues around that with people wearing devices, recording people? We're a one-party consent state, North Carolina, but how is this going to impact the workplace? Those are some of the questions that I have and concerns that I have around the technology. Is it okay to record things or to transcribe things on your phone with ChatGPT, or how do we enforce things around that nature?
I don't think that the dust has even remotely settled on that. I'm not even sure all the dust has been kicked up on that yet. So as a means of beginning to wind down our conversation here, looking ahead, you know, we were talking a bit about some of the short-term sort of ethical implications of widespread adoption of AI in education. Looking longer term, do you see a way for policymakers and educators to work together to try and address some of these challenges proactively?
Yeah, we'll have to, but we'll also have to work with industry because they're the ones who are rapidly moving this technology. I was in another meeting before I came on here, And I was saying this thing is changing monthly. And my co-presenter was like, no, it's changing every day. So definitely industry has to play a role in it. Government, definitely. I would like to see industry take a bigger role. Why would I say that? If you think you mentioned about accounting standards, and it's kind of, when you think about the accounting standards, you're kind of catching up to what has already happened. So I think with things moving so fast now, it's important to have industry to really work together with educators and government to let us know, hey, this is coming. This is what we're working on. So we can have time to put guardrails if necessary, prepare, and understand what the environment is going to look like. Because for me, it's hard. And I say that because you got to think about it. I've got a freshman. If I've got a freshman in my principal's class, I've got to think about, how am I going to help this student in 4 years? What are they going to need to know 4 years from now when they graduate? And then you think about how things changed last day of November 2022 to today. So there has to be some coordination, particularly on the education side, to be able to help these students and for us to not only help the students, really it all plays together, because you help the students, you're helping the workforce, and the workforce is helping society. So that's the government, you know. So I think that's an important thing to think about.
You're certainly not alone in that. I think Singapore is one of the first governments that's offering free retraining for people in their 40s who can show that AI has essentially eaten their job. I just get concerned. Noah Yuval Harari, I think on a late night show, was interviewed recently, and he said, it's one of the first times in human history that we honestly don't know how to train our next generation, because we have no idea what the world is going to look like in 20 years. It's moving so fast. And so that makes me certainly take a big gulp. What are we supposed to do in this situation? And I'm very happy to hear that there are big thinkers like yourself who are down in the trenches trying to work on this stuff for us.
You made a good point, because what you said about that quote, it reminds me of, there's a book by Steven Johnson, Where Good Ideas Come From. And in that book, they talk about the 10-10 rule. And the 10-10 rule is that, okay, it takes 10 years, traditionally, it would take 10 years to develop a technology, 10 years to adopt it. So let's say 10 years to develop a color TV, then 10 years for it to widely be adopted. That does not exist anymore. And when you think about, you know, they talk about Moore's Law, and they're pushing to get faster and faster and more chips. So the compute and everything, it is going to be unbelievable leap forward and movement forward across the board. So I think one thing that is important to try to do is to have a mindset of lifelong learning. And at this point, in my opinion, be technology agnostic. Learn as much as you can. The bad thing is, when you talk about these LLMs, these large language models, they're changing every day, which is a bad thing. So you got to keep learning instead to stay on top of it. The good thing is, for the most part, they're doing the same stuff. So you can load up document, they'll analyze things for you. You can put images, so some have vision, but you have to prompt. So you got to prompt them. So if you focus on, my suggestion, focus on learning how to use one really well, or use one often, then you can carry over to the other ones. There's a lower learning curve if you move over to another.
My final question for you before we completely wind down here. If you were dictator of the world for a day and you had the sway for your academic colleagues or for policymakers somewhere to try to come up with something really proactive in this space that would lead for a positive legacy, any ideas around something that you would try to institute?
Free internet for everybody. Everyone has free high-speed internet. I think that would be amazing, because it would eliminate one barrier. Because as we talked about earlier, we pay for ChatGPT-4. I don't know if the students have internet access at home, where they'll be able to access it. That would eliminate, and that would be a huge equalizer, not only in urban areas, but in rural areas as well, across the board. I think that would be amazing.
Thank you for that last insight. I want to open up the floor to you. Any final thoughts before we adjourn for the day?
Yeah, I wanted to just say that I think we are living in a very interesting time. It is an amazing time because of all of the changes. And I think in a short period of time, we'll get to see so much transition, so much change, which can be scary. But I think one way to look at it as we're able to experience a new world developing. I think, in my opinion, especially with the rapid rate of change with technology, and instead of running from it, I think it's important to move toward it and embrace it, because it's not going anywhere. That is one thing for sure, especially when you see so many companies investing billions upon billions of dollars into technology. It is not going anywhere.
Well said. Dr. Akpan, thank you so much for your time today. This has been a lovely conversation. And to the rest of our listeners, we'll see you next time. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Max.
AI, Government, and the Future is brought to you by Corner Alliance. To find out more about Corner Alliance and how we work with government to create results, visit our website at corneralliance.com. And then make sure to search for AI Government Future in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found. And click subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. On behalf of the team here at Corner Alliance, thanks for listening.